passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are in the second half of the program. Nicole Auerbach joining us on a couple of big stories today from the national scene, the CFP meetings. What did they accomplish? Not much. And the firing of Mel Tucker, once considered among the brightest coaches in the entire country. He is gone after a tumultuous off-the-field controversy. Let's continue with Jason up next in Texas. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are well.
I want to talk to you about this past weekend's Notre Dame-Ohio State game.
Okay.
I know Ryan Day said a lot of stuff about Lou Holtz, and probably he should have been talking about how good his players like Egbuka and a young quarterback played. But I tell you, a lot has been made about the 11th player not being there on the football field in the last couple of plays. I didn't even notice that. But what I did notice is some questionable play calling on Notre Dame's last possessions when I felt like they could have bled a lot more clock than they did. I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, I thought the play selection was curious, and equally curious was Ryan Day's play selection on that final drive. I mean, some utterly bizarre moments. He got away with it in the end. I think his quarterback helped to bail him out. But that is one
I
of those things.
I think his quarterback responded.
Yeah, you just can't have that happen.
Exactly. I think the young man responded real well about, especially after that intentional grounding. And
right.
Egbuka did really, really excellent. Have you heard anything about Marcus Freeman maybe being looked at for Michigan State?
I have not, and I think you'd have to wonder why would he want to leave Notre Dame for a second-rate program like Michigan State.
My thoughts exactly. Thanks for taking my call, Paul.
Thank you. I'm sure you Spartans are going to argue with me about being second-rate, but I have no doubt Marcus Freeman is a viable candidate anywhere, but I also don't think he would walk out of Notre Dame. It's just nobody leaves Notre Dame, right? Wesley is in Atlanta. Hello, Wesley.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, good afternoon.
I just wanted to tell Legend, you better quit talking about them dogs like that. Go Dogs.
Well, thank you, Wesley. We needed that. Ernest is in Texas. Hello, Ernest.
Hello, Paul. How you doing?
Thank you very much. We're doing great.
Good. Listen, I don't get to catch your show every day, and you may have already addressed this week based on what happened in this past Saturday's Texas A&M Auburn game. But Auburn intercepted a fumble in the air, and they had a convoy going down the left sideline right in front of the A&M bench. And Jimbo was about 8 or 10 feet out on the field, and that herd of elephants was headed right to him. The camera was at the back of the player running for a touchdown for Auburn, and there was Jimbo deer in the headlights. And my question is, what is the rule on something like that? If they had run into Jimbo and had been knocked out of bounds, or if in some way Jimbo's being on the field had caused the runner to slow down enough that he'd been tackled from behind, would Auburn been given a touchdown, and would Jimbo and or A&M been penalized, and or would Jimbo
I mean,
have been fined?
I'm going to defer to somebody that actually understands the rules, but there's no doubt he would have been penalized. I think it would have been give me a second to make sure I get the right ruling on that. I just hate to pontificate and be wrong. But he had no business being on the field. That's for sure. There are clear rules on that.
Well, almost every game you see on TV these days, either the referees or the coaches are getting their players back off the field.
Right.
And you and a caller, a couple of callers back, We're talking about Lane Kiffin's $9 million contract. Well, it kind of seems like the bigger your contract is, the more you act like the rules don't apply to you. And to me, that was extremely unsportsmanlike to be out on the field like that. And if you watch A&M football, he's out there on a regular basis.
Well, there's no doubt, Ernest, if you come out and impede the play, you're going to get a touchdown on that. That's pretty clear. But I think it's sometimes there is a judgment call these things do happen occasionally, though, because coaches are very active, and Jimbo is a hyperactive. Hey, thank you very much. I'll get you the exact ruling in a minute. When it happened in the NFL a couple of years ago to Mike Tomlin, he got a serious fine. I don't know what Jimbo would have. Of course, he got fined $100,000. $100,000 for Jimbo is like tip money at the barbershop. Dr. Bulldog from L.A. is up next.
Great show, Paul. My Bulldogs travel on the road to take on Auburn in the plains. The people in the desert, the smart guys, said we're 17-point favorites. I'm not so sure about that, Paul. It's an old-fashioned rivalry, neighboring states, where Carson Beck is still a work in progress. Road game, we've had significant injuries at the skill position. It's going to be closer than people think. I don't like Auburn. It's one of those things where I'll go back to 79 with this hate, being a Bulldog fan. And, you know, I think Carson Beck is all we got at quarterback, because the other two behind him, you know, Vandegrift and Gunnar Stockton, are just too raw. So I think we're going to get out of there with a win, but this is a huge road test. I know there's some significant games across the country, USC, Colorado being one of them, Alabama and whoever they play, but Georgia at Auburn in the Deep South oldest rivalry. This is Vince Dooley versus Pat Dye, my mind, you know.
Well, this game is always special. I felt like it was a lot more special when it was the middle of November, same weekend for a million years, and you knew at that moment what was at stake and what was left to play. I don't like this game just being slapped around the schedule like it's some insignificant SEC game. I think in the pantheon of important SEC games, I mean, it's top tier. And I know the reasons that were given, but they weren't very good ones. So the only thing I would argue back with you is everything you said is true, except the Auburn offense is so bad right now, it's hard to imagine them manufacturing a lot of production.
Well, that's a very good point, Paul. I'm glad you brought that up, because defensively, we're pretty much sound. We get some people back defensively, especially Javon Bullitt, my all-star safety, number 22. If you're a betting guy, take the under, if you will, because we're not going to score much either. Again, Carson Beck should survive, and this is where Kirby Smart is going to earn his checks, because, you know, on the road with a young quarterback, you just never know, brother.
No,
you know?
Bulldog, I will offer, having been to many of those games, as I know you have, Georgia caught a break with this game being early, 2:30 kickoff. I think at nighttime it would have been a far more frightening setting for Carson Beck. I'm not saying it was. I've been to Auburn games at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's a great scene, but it's a better scene at 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's really all I got, brother. Love your show. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Always great to hear from you from L.A. We go from L.A. to almost L.A., but the middle of Mississippi. Squirrel is next. A squirrel sighting early in the week.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was hearing your previous caller a minute ago talk about Jimbo interfering with the play. If a player or a coach came off the sideline and interfered with the runner on what's going to be an obvious touchdown, then he's awarded the touchdown. And if you go back in history, Alabama history, an Alabama player came off the sideline in the Rose Bowl. Was it in the 40s or the 20s?
It was the 50s. The player was I saw that play yesterday.
From Greenville, he was
Tommy Lewis was the name, his name, and he.
Yeah, so he was from
Alabama was named Baylor, and a guy named Dickie Maigle was had already had his touchdown on, I think, a punt.
Yeah.
And Tommy came off and tackled him.
And they, and they were awarded a touchdown, if you recall. So it would have happened if Jimbo had interfered with this Auburn player, would be my understanding.
You are correct.
The rules are. But now I've been laying in the weeds, man, listening the past couple of weeks. I went on vacation last week and had to do some truck shopping the past week. My engine went bad on the other one. But I've been listening to some of your regular guys, and, man, everybody seems a little testy. I seems particularly testy the past few weeks. Ever since he started dating Jim, he's just been, I don't know, just a little salty. And
Squirrel, help me with
Jim
something. Will you? Usually when you start dating someone, you tend to loosen up, don't you?
You intend to do what again?
Don't you tend to loosen up?
Yeah, you would think, but when you get comfortable in the relationship, you would loosen up some. Again, it's in the early stages, and they're still working things out.
It could be parents, you know, nervous meeting parents and all that.
Yeah. And Jim yesterday got upset with Legend about some of the language Legend uses, when there's probably no one with a worse potty mouth in real life than Jim from Tuscaloosa. So, again, he's just being a hypocrite, which is typical for that old geezer. But thanks for taking my call, man. It's been great listening to the show the past few weeks. Aloha.
We'll take a short break. We are barely past the midpoint on this Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. I mentioned the Tommy Lewis situation a few minutes ago. I think it may have been Rice, not Baylor. But it is one of the most famous plays in history. Just not that Jimbo's play will go down in history as anything important, but I believe it was the 54 Cotton Bowl, Rice in Alabama. And Tommy Lewis became very close friends with him later in life. He lived in Huntsville, Alabama, one of the truly genuine people you'll ever meet. And to his death a couple of years ago, he never really completely got over doing what he did. He felt like he had brought disrespect and shame to Alabama when he really didn't. It was just an honest young person's mistake. In the famous line that he had, when they asked him afterwards why he came off the bench, he said, "I was just too full of Bama." In many ways, he was a hero. I've never been in a setting or seen Tommy where he wasn't revered by the Alabama people. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Eddie is in Georgia. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, is this Paul?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
We are doing great.
Paul, I'm going to pray to the Lord that Alabama don't lose another ball game, because you're going to have to change the name of your show to the Paul Feinbaum Alabama Blues Show. A few weeks ago when L. Duncan called in, you kept playing them three jabronis over and over again about Alabama was going to win the West, But that Desmond Howdy Booty Howard, Pat can't make a pick, and Kurt been on Herb Street too long, got the Alabama fans all in their heads in the clouds, if that's possible. And now they lost that ball game against Texas, and they can't get over it. UAB is the best team in Alabama. And the Legend better listen to Wesley. He was six. Now I'll get off now, Paul, and let y'all go.
Well, thank you for enlightening us. Jeff is up next in Ohio. Hello, Jeff.
What's going on, Paul?
Jeff, doing great.
Hey, where's all the Notre Dame callers at? They go away?
They have left the building.
They've left the building, haven't they? I mean, dude, you hear half of them talking on the street. All they want to say was, we really won that game. I acted like a last-second comeback victory. Doesn't matter. Doesn't count. The way I look at it, the scoreboard said we won the game, didn't it, Paul?
That's the game I was watching Saturday night.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I got to believe there hasn't been too many callers recently that probably haven't been as critical of some of the national media and talking heads as I've been. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree.
Okay. I think it's getting more and more evident every week that the majority of college football coaches are just as fed up with this national media and the way these talking head shows are out there. They're fed up. Have you noticed how much I'm not trying to justify Ryan Day, because I think he should have just stopped and just should have said something like, that was for you, Lou. I think he went a little too far. But last weekend alone, you had Day with an outburst. You had the Oregon State coach was really pissed off.
Yeah,
the
that guy made, he went after Lee Corso.
Corso.
And
ESPN
Corso
in
didn't even say what the guy accused him of saying.
But I just think these coaches have had enough.
Well, good for them. By the way, these coaches can get mad at the media all they want.
Don't fluff it off.
But they're making. But the reason why Ryan Day makes $10 million a year is because of Fox and ESPN.
Okay, but let me finish.
Well,
you're just going to slough it off because you're in the media.
No.
Hey,
Jeff, hold on a second. Jeff, if there's legitimate criticism of the media, I'm all in. I'm not protecting the media. Neely Way. I think some very prominent media people act like complete stooges on Twitter by going after fans and fan bases, and you know exactly who I'm talking about.
I agree 100% with you, Paul. Hey, but let me finish here. Dan Lanning went ballistic, okay? I don't personally think he and other coaches are taking shots at Deion Sanders. They're taking shots at how the media is covering Deion Sanders. That's what they're sick and tired of, and that's the same media, Paul. How critical was all these national media talking heads guys back in the spring of Deion cleaning house? Now they all think because he won 3 ball games that he walks on water. It's total bull crap.
Well, Jeff, there are a lot of people, Jeff, there are a lot of people that can't handle what Deion is doing, but I applaud what he's doing because he is changing the culture of college football. He's opening the door that many have never gone through. People are watching college football in relation to Deion that wouldn't normally watch. I mean, the idea that 10 million people watch Colorado and Oregon, if that game 2 years ago, it would have drawn 1.5 million people.
It would have been on Fox Sports 2 or something like that. You know what I mean? But my point is, Paul, and I want to know if you agree or disagree. I don't think the average fans and coaches out there are upset with Deion himself. I think they're upset at how both Fox and ESPN
whatever that show was, Skip Bayless, I was at a gym this morning, and it came on, and the very first story was Deion. Now, there's no way in the world that they would normally be talking about that on a Wednesday, 2 days after an NFL Monday night and a day before another NFL game. But they have that game Saturday, so they're promoting it. That's how networks operate. You know that, Jeff. You're plenty smart when it comes to...
Well, I get that, Paul, but it's gone over the top the last 3 or 4 years, and I think it's because of the competition of Fox and ESPN. I really do.
No, that's not even it. There's a reason. I mean, I'm on a national show this morning, and the first question is about Deion. Why? It's obvious why, because people care.
I get it. But just like McAfee with Holt in that interview, you can't tell me Lou Holt wasn't playing to the crowd and all that. Don't give me this 86 years old. He was sitting back in that chair.
Jeff, just accept the fact that an old man who everybody forgot and wasn't even sure was alive made a fool out of Ryan Day. Just stick that in your pipe and smoke it, okay?
Oh, I don't care if he made a fool, and that's fine you think that, Paul. My point is he's on
McAfee's show. Ryan Day looked like, some – infused crazy man, because they stole his gold medal in the Olympics in weightlifting.
Hey,
he looks like an idiot.
You may have a point. You're not listening to my point. I'm cutting past that.
He got so excited, some of that Grecian formula in his beard started bleeding.
Hey, don't be jealous. He's got hair, Paul, all over his face, and somebody doesn't. So don't be jealous of him.
There's nothing that Ryan Day has that I want, I can assure you.
I guarantee you want his $10
million. That doesn't faze me in the least.
Hey, Paul, listen to me, though. It's the shows out there, like Holtz on McAfee. All they're doing is trying to get attention.
Hey, Jeff, why do I care? I don't want to sound like Dion here, but why do I care about any of those other shows?
I'm telling you that the coaches are getting sick of it.
Well, good for them.
I really do. I think the coaches have had enough.
And the reason why coaches are getting sick of it, because they're some of the most thin-skinned people on the face of the earth.
Thanks, Jeff.
We're up against the break. Nicole Auerbach will join us talking about the CFP and the firing today of Mel Tucker.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
There is a lot to unpack with our next guest, Nicole Auerbach, who stands tall with so much. She has too many jobs for us even to identify right now. But it's great to have her. She was covering two stories today, Mel Tucker's firing and, of course, the CFP meetings in Chicago. Nicole, thank you very much. Let's start with the CFP. What did we learn out of this? What happened?
We did not learn much. They did not make any final decisions on changing the format. We know they've been talking about it, or at least talking about it publicly, about the idea of changing the number of conference champions in the format. It's going to stay at 12 teams, but do you keep it at 6 conference champions, 6 at-large teams? Do you change it to 5 and 7 because you're losing a power conference? I feel like there's a lot of support in that room for going to 5 and 7, but Mike Oresko, initially last night, the American commissioner told a small group of us that he supports 5 and 7, believes it's something that they have to do. But then later in the night and then this morning walked it back to say, well, he's good with that for 2026 on, but he wants 6 and 6 for now so that there's at least 2 group of 5 champions in the mix. So that is still TBD and tabled and could be decided at a later point. But otherwise, they really just received presentations from different media companies. Bill Hancock told us that 5 different media companies came and presented in person, and that they've also had contact and been expressed interest in from 4 or 5 other companies. So that's kind of more big picture. Some of it's for, you know, the next year where there's those 4 first round games that don't have a TV partner yet. And some of it's just big picture when this thing, you know, when a new deal is presented and done for 2026. So no final decisions. But again, they're starting to work through some of the media rights pieces of this, and they eventually do need to decide if they are going to change the format.
And some of it, there was just a couple of media people wanting a good dinner in Chicago, apparently. I didn't know there were that many media companies that were involved or could be involved in college football.
Well, there's some good steakhouses over here by O'Hare, so I'm sure that's what it was.
The other story was expected. It still was fairly startling to see the bulletin when Mel Tucker was fired. This was going to happen, but what happens now to Mel Tucker in terms of, his reputation?
Yeah, well, his reputation is something I think he's fighting for, and we've seen him put out a lot of public statements, and his lawyers clearly are going hard at Michigan State, and there's already been a threat of a lawsuit we had from Mel Tucker last week when he mentioned looking forward to seeing in discovery what administrators knew when and how they shared information. So I don't think that piece is done yet. He's certainly going to fight and try to get some of that money because Michigan State is trying not to pay it, and we're talking upwards of $70 million. So there's a lot of money at stake here. And I think that also goes way towards, you know, trying to fight to repair his reputation. You know, he has clearly been fighting that this is a consensual relationship, that he doesn't believe the school should have had any jurisdiction to investigate. So we'll see. That's all going to continue to play out. It's going to continue to be messy. And the school's investigation and that process is also going to continue. There's still going to be that hearing in the beginning of October. There's still going to be a final finding of fact in the university process and the grievance process as well. But otherwise, Michigan State's able to move forward and begin a coaching search.
Which is where I want to ask you next. I'm not sure how good a job this is anymore after the recent years and the ups and downs, but what type of names do you think are going to not just be mentioned, but be prominent and be legitimate?
Well, I do think it is going to be an appealing job because, as you know, I mean, you're going to see a lot of coaches trying to get into the Big Ten and the SEC. So I think this is going to be a really interesting litmus test for sort of how attractive those jobs are. Maybe if it's not Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, you know, are you going to be able to lure candidates in from the ACC and the Big 12? Because either, you know, you're going to be able to pay more, but maybe it's just the promise of the resources and the financials that are going to be happening as we continue to see those two leagues pull apart. So I think, you know, Michigan State's best teams have been those that, you know, you develop talent. Maybe it's 3-4-star guys or 2-3-star guys, and you're building them into eventual pros. So I think you got to look at builders. And, you know, I think the list starts with Mike Elko and the terrific job he has done at Duke. He has spent most of his career places where he's not going to be coaching the most talented roster in the league. And he's so smart and he maximizes things. Obviously, they've got a great defensive identity and they've really developed Riley Leonard. So, you know, someone like him or Chris Kleiman, Lance Leipold, Jonathan Smith, some of these coaches that have taken on really hard jobs and done impressive work and really built a program, built a culture, but really developed the talent that they had to maximize it. I think those are the types of coaches that Michigan State should look at.
Talking to Nicole Auerbach, Nicole, we've seen 4 weeks of football, and everybody has different opinions. This is not like recent years when, oh, Alabama's easily the number one team or Georgia. As you look at the landscape, you know, watching all these games, being at places, who has stood out the most to you so far?
Well, you know, I actually think, generally speaking, it's the teams at the top of the Pac-12. Like, I think Washington has been incredibly impressive. I think they've looked the part, and I think you could make a case that they deserve to be the number one team in the country. Probably from the first quarter on, they've played better than anybody else, and they've just blitzed past teams. That offense is a problem. You've got an NFL quarterback and 3 NFL receivers. They're going to put up crazy yardage and points on a lot of teams. And I just think, like, my hope coming into the season was that the quarterbacks in that league were going to be terrific. And they are. And I think, you know, I might not even have had Cam Ward and Washington State on my radar in the same way that I did with Washington and Oregon and USC and Utah and all these other schools. And now Wazoo has really emerged as well as a contender in the Pac-12. And then, you know, Colorado obviously plays into that. And that's been the number one story. It's gone beyond sports. But I think from a football standpoint, just the fact that that league is as strong at the top as we thought it was. And then secondarily, Florida State delivering and winning two monster games this year, Florida State being back, and then Texas possibly being back, going into Alabama, winning the way that they did at Bryant Denny. Like, we always want and talk about those blue bloods, and we say, are they back? Are they nationally relevant? Well, we're talking about a season where those two are Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, USC. I mean, it's all the blue bloods.
Nicole, we've heard from a few fans who take some exception to your rankings every week. I believe you have Georgia at number four. This is the perfect forum to explain to Georgia fans why they are the number four team in the country.
Well, I came very close to keeping them at number one. And I think it's just it's a philosophical choice. So it's either you keep it Georgia than Michigan, or you lean into the resumes and the results. And so I decided to go with the body of work. So I started to take the teams that had won the games against impressive opponents. So I put Florida State number one this week because of the win in overtime at Clemson, snapped 7-game losing streak, and the strength of that win over LSU and the way that they beat them. But you could totally make a case for Georgia to be the number one team in the country. And you could default to that because they're back-to-back national champs, even though they've looked sluggish. And that's a totally fair take, and I almost did it myself, and I had done it every week previously. And I'm going to probably view them in that boat. I'm going to pencil them into the playoff until, you know, obviously I'm proven otherwise, or they lose two games or something unheard of. But I think right now there's a lot of the top teams in a very wide-open field that have actually played really good opponents. We've had a lot of teams that have had those measuring stick games, and then there are a couple, Michigan and Georgia, that haven't. So I think you either just have to, like, philosophically say, I believe they're the best, or just put the resumes above and still believe that they're there. And certainly in the way that even in looking at the rankings, like, Georgia would be in the playoff because they are the team to beat in the SEC. I'm not projecting that they're going to lose a game or anything. So I still love Georgia. I still have high expectations for Georgia, but I've decided at least this week, and I reserve the right to change it next week, that I'm going to base it off of the quality of the wins that they have. And they just haven't, it's not their fault that they haven't had the schedule that some of these other teams have had. It's not their fault that Oklahoma game got canceled, but that's how I'm ranking teams for now. And I know that not everyone will agree with that.
And now the real money question with Nicole Auerbach, of course, from The Athletic, NBC. We see you on the Big Ten Network. So I ask you this from the studios of the SEC Network, because I'm asked this all the time, and I need an answer. What's wrong with the SEC this year?
You know, I would be much more curious your answers and your listeners' answers on this. But my theory has mostly just been about the quarterback play. And, you know, it's something that's really hard to hit on, and we see so many transfer quarterbacks. But, like, part of the reason I was so excited about the Pac-12 this season was you had a lot of veteran quarterbacks that have been prolific. And you just felt good about handing them the reins to your offense and knowing what you're going to get. And knowing what you're going to get in tough games or close games down the stretch is part of the reason, like, even though Notre Dame just lost, like, Sam Hartman to Notre Dame has changed. To me, it's raised the ceiling for that team this season because of how experienced he is and how good he is. And so you have a lot of unproven quarterbacks in the SEC, and you also have some transfers who weren't all that impressive at their previous stop. And so I think that that can be a limiting factor for some of these teams as well. And then there is just a cyclical nature. Like, Alabama was never going to be, like, the most dominant team in the sport indefinitely. And so you think about the portal, you think about some of the players that maybe typically would have gone to an Alabama, maybe went to a Georgia, or some guys that were buried on the depth chart who may have stuck around before, but now transferred somewhere else to play right away. And I do think that that eventually factors in and eventually, you know, catches up, as well as the coordinator changes. I mean, it's been remarkable that Alabama has stayed at the level they were with changing coaches so frequently. So maybe that's something that plays in. But I think across the board in the middle of the pack teams and some of the teams towards the bottom, I really think quarterback play is a big part of the explanation.
We asked you, answered. Always great to talk to you, Nicole, on a very busy day. Thank you so much. Nicole Auerbach joining us from The Athletic. And we take a break here. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Yeah, I am. I'm starting to struggle right now, so I need some Red Bull. What about you, Keith? We got Red Bull on the phone.
Hello, how's it going, Paul?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a second or third time caller, long time listener, love the show, but I got a problem. I got a problem with all these guys calling in bashing my Auburn Tigers, and I got some stats here for you, and I wanted to run them by you real quick. Auburn had the third highest percentage of blue chip recruits in the 2024 class. There was only two teams that were above them. You know who those two teams were, Paul?
About Red Bull, not only do I not know, I don't care.
Well, okay. Well, Ohio State had 80% and Georgia had 77%, coming in at third. Also, I was going to call in last night, but, you know, Legend called in before I could call in and wasted about 10 or 15 minutes of your precious airtime and our call time. And so anyway, you know, Georgia comes to Auburn this weekend. I predict that Auburn's going to do pretty good in that game. So for Daryl, he can get his popcorn and corn dogs. Oh, and speaking of corn dogs, let me also bring up that Legend, if brains were gasoline, he couldn't drive a piss-ants go-kart around a Cheerio. More damn Eagle.
Linda is up next. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Hi, Paul.
Hey.
I'm from Tennessee.
That's great.
And I'm married to... I'm the wife of a duck and deer hunting, fishing, football guy, and we watch your show every day.
Well, thank you. Linda, where in Tennessee do you live?
Gordonsville. It's about an hour from Nashville.
Okay. Well.
And I've got a poem for you.
A poem? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. Oh, what a guy. I'm reading this. You're erudite, articulate, with humor, so wry. Yes, Mr. P, we love the way you talk to all, even some of the idiots that call. That's it.
Well, that was truly remarkable. I felt like I was listening to Edgar Allan Poe and Robert Frost mixed together.
But anyway, we're from Tennessee, and we are Alabama fans, and sorry, Titans, roll Tide. My husband would love to say hello to you. Would that be okay?
What is his name?
Roger.
Roger. Well, put Roger that, and put Roger on.
Hello, Mr. Paul.
Well, Roger, pleasure to meet you. Thank you. I've had a great conversation with your wife, and we appreciate you calling.
Yeah. I used to be, back when you were at Tennessee, I was a ball boy for Tennessee for 13 years, and my grandfather, you may remember him, you may not, Lon Rooster Carpenter.
Oh, I do remember that. Yes, sir.
He was the equipment manager for UT for 19 years.
Absolutely. I do remember him very well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great to talk to you,
Paul.
Well,
tell me about
you
that, Linda. Roger, what was, when you were, tell me about some of your experiences as doing that. What do you remember?
Okay. I was there during the last year's Bowden. And I ran through, Bill Battle.
Sure.
Some more of them. I used to
So Bowden Wyatt would have gone out in the mid-50s, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's okay. Right.
And he was replaced. I remember Jim McDonald?
Yes, Jim McDonald was there, and then I can't remember.
Yeah, I remember. I got to know Jim. Jim was in the athletic department when I was a student, and he was one of the nicest people to me. And then there was, Coach Dickey and then Battle?
Right. And then, of course, my grandfather, he and Breezy Wynn, I don't know if you remember Breezy or not, they invented the 7-man sled. Also, the 2-man sled.
Oh, wow.
And, but they never
Those were
did,
used, Roger, get, for blocking drills, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he also made a thing for the running backs where they run through them and they hit it with their head down and that didn't go over too well.
Hey, Roger, we're about to lose you here because of the time, but thank you very much. Thanks, Linda. This was a great thrill to talk to both of you.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.